Jewish Latin Princess, Episode 15, Abigail Pogrebin, author of My Jewish Year.
You're listening to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast by Yael. Every week, get your dose of inspiration from the world's most uniquely talented Jewish women. And from Yael herself. Seeking profound and practical ways to live a joyful, richer Jewish life? Welcome to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast. And now, Jewish lifestyle expert and bilingual blogger at JewishLatinPrincess.com, your host, Yael.
You're listening to Jewish Latin Princess, everyone. I'm your host, Yael Trush. Welcome back, and thank you for being here. Do you know all the Jewish holidays? There are a lot of them. Do you observe them? Do you know what they're about? And if you do observe them, do you go through the motions year after year, or do you try to be mindful and intentional about the time in the calendar that you're experiencing? My guest today is Abigail Pogrebin, who took on the task to immerse herself in the Jewish calendar by studying and observing every holiday over a 12-month period. She chronicles her journey in her latest book, My Jewish Year, 18 Holidays and One Wandering Jew. It is an honest and refreshing account of Abby's dive into the entire Jewish calendar with all its holidays, the well-known ones and the more obscure ones. Abby is also the author of Stars of David, Prominent Jews Talk About Being Jewish, and of One and the Same, where she delves into every aspect of growing up as an identical twin. Abigail has had a very prolific and successful career as a journalist, both in TV and in print. She was formerly a broadcast producer at PBS and at 60 Minutes. She has been published in many magazines and newspapers, including Newsweek, New York Magazine, The Forward, Tablet, and The Daily Beast. She is currently the president of Central Synagogue in Manhattan. Abby and I have a beautiful conversation about her journey. What was the impetus for diving into this entire Jewish calendar? And in my typical style, I try to not let my guests off the hook. I gently challenge Abby to think about the fact that there might have been a soul calling happening over here, as well as to think and tell me if she's now become more sensitive to divine intervention or Ashgacha Pratit in her life. Abby is so honest and real. She's lovely. And I could relate to a lot of what she was saying, as I know you will. We talk about her journey during this entire year. We talk about Judaism, about parenting, feminism, and so much more. And I leave Abby with some wonderful homework and possibly with an idea for a second part of her book. Enjoy the delightful Abby Pogrebin. Abby Pogrebin, welcome to Jewish Latin Princess. Such a pleasure to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to dig in right to your latest book, My Jewish Year. So, but I want to set it up for listeners. You're really a prolific writer. You're well known for your book, Stars of David, Prominent Jews Talk About Being Jewish. And I'm sure many have read it. And of course, later on, you wrote One and the Same, where you delve into your life as an identical twin. And now you've come out with this gorgeous, beautiful book, My Jewish Year, 18 Holidays and One Wandering Jew. And so when I read the book, and being that I was also familiar with your work before, you know, I said to myself, you know, there was no question that as far as American Jews go, you were pretty connected. I mean, like you married a Jewish man, which is already like a big deal, you know. You guys had a Jewish life, you moved in Jewish circles, you attended high holiday services. So there was definitely like a connection. You felt part of a Jewish tribe, for lack of a better word. But however, something really propelled you to go into this exploration, and not at a time where people are usually searching. You know, it wasn't like you were in college or your 20s. It was later in life. So yeah. I guess like the question is like, and I know it's hard sometimes to put these things into word, but do you know, what was the impetus? Like, what do you think propelled you to dive into this exploration of Jewish life and calendar?
Yeah, I think that it was one of those things where the glass was half empty and instead of half full. I felt like something was missing.
Okay.
I didn't necessarily put my finger on it.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it was kind of being on one side of the fence, looking over on the other side of the fence and seeing people kind of enjoy and be enriched by and even, frankly, transformed by a tradition that I didn't fully understand. Mm-hmm. I certainly had more than a toe dipped in already, but I kind of felt like I was, I'd sort of had the 101 course. I'd never had, you know, the full menu, the full demands of a Jewish year or Jewish life. And I knew that didn't mean I was going to choose Orthodoxy at this point in my life, you know, which I just smile about because I think it's a very demanding religion. I think I say that with great respect and actual positivity, but we can't mince words about what it requires. It requires a great deal. And I feel like if you are not raised with an Orthodox tradition, routine, expectation, that's a, you know, a sort of a bigger bridge to cross.
Absolutely.
I was more interested in really understanding what it would mean to live by the Jewish calendar, because my gut told me that it really is, in many ways, the infrastructure or the architecture of a Jewish life. You know, every 5 seconds, it seems to me there's a Jewish holiday. And I wanted to understand why. Like, these things can't be arbitrary. They can't have endured as they have miraculously for thousands of years unless they have some power to them.
Right.
And I wanted a taste of that. I wanted to understand that.
Yes, and you're right. Do you think part of it maybe was from your soul, that part that you can't explain? Did you come to that conclusion or not?
I love that question, but I'm afraid of that question. I think I'm just one of those practical, kind of a little bit hard-edged New Yorkers who's afraid to talk about things like spirituality and soul, but do if in my heart of hearts, in my private moments, absolutely. I think you've hit on something very true. And, you know, it's a hard thing to articulate anyway.
Right, it is.
Maybe less difficult for someone like you or others who, if it's in the vernacular kind of your life, you're sort of confronting it more often. But for those of us who kind of are ducking that kind of spiritual confrontation, you know, it's not something I necessarily had reckoned with before, if that makes sense.
Right.
Something was driving me very internally that is very hard to grasp.
So, you know, you mentioned that a lot of these things are not arbitrary, and I want to touch on the calendar itself in a little bit, but you just reminded me of this concept, which you're very sensitive to have picked up on it, and I'm going to kind of define it in my words, and you tell me if you agree, but it's this idea of divine providence, of Hashgacha Pratit, that we, as Jews, we believe that God is not just the creator of the world, but he is intimately involved in every detail of creation, from the person and everything that happens in our lives, from the person you bumped into at the coffee shop this morning to our conversation here today. And I think at some times in your book, even if you don't put it in those words, you do use the term that you felt like the calendar came to meet you. And there were instances where you felt like whatever was going in your life, Judaism had a direct message for you at the time. For example, Purim, I think you heard that wonderful line from the Megillah, that pivotal moment where Mordechai, you know, tells Esther, who knows if this was not why you were chosen, and salvation will come to the Jews no matter what. It's a question of whether you're going to step up to the plate or you're going to stand on the sidelines, right? And at that moment, you had been asked to step up and become the president of your synagogue. And, you know, you didn't necessarily want that, but you felt like, oh my goodness, like, there is something here. And there were other instances with your friend, you know, running out of medical options and the passing of your late father-in-law. And so I wonder, do you think you, now that you look at your life after this wonderful journey, do you think you became more sensitive to that sense of something is talking to me? There are messages out there. Nothing is coincidence. You know, there is divine intervention in some level. Do you think you became a little bit more sensitive in your everyday life to that?
Yeah, you know, that it's such a great question. And again, it's tricky territory because some would say, you know, prove it. And I actually would say, you know, I kind of can for myself.
Right.
There are so many instances, you've named many of them, and there have been others since and before, that I do now recognize as in some way, you know, I don't know if it's divinely organized or, you know, predestined, but I feel, you know, the way I kind of put it is that God is in the room. And I think that's, you know, it's a difficult thing to quantify when you're not an Orthodox Jew who has sort of the vocabulary, you know, the halachic vocabulary or the vocabulary where you're just assuming God every day. Mm-hmm. You know, when I asked you how you were at the beginning of this interview, you said, you know, I'm well, thank God. And that's something that I know is a reflex that some, you know, some Jews have and some don't.
Right.
And when you don't articulate that or you're not so comfortable, it's a more private experience of
right.
divinity.
Yes.
And that said, it's absolutely, I feel like at play in some way. I stumbled here, and I admit that in some ways I'm a flailing beginner, mm-hmm. but I feel like it can't just be an accident that I've taken, you know, I went from sort of being a more generalized journalist to a very Jewish orientation and a Jewish focus and a Jewish path.
Right, right. I do agree with you. I definitely cannot be an accident. And you've done a beautiful job at it. Tell us, you embarked in all of them, all the holidays, the more obscure ones, all of them, the more, you know, even things that, you know, for somebody that like me, who's been observing this for already, I didn't grow up with it, by the way, but it's been already like maybe 15 years. And last night I was starting to think about my next column for the newspaper, and it comes out right before Tisha B'Av. And I was like, okay, let me revisit this holiday. Like, what does it mean to be? What exactly can I talk to people about? So we have to do this. You know, ideally, we should be learning and reflecting and, you know, rethinking about all these days that we're going to be reliving every year. And so any periods or any dates, any holidays that stood out in you that were kind of really resonated with you, that really favorites or?
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, some of them were the surprises of things I had done before, but had really not reinvestigated or revisited in a way that deepened them enormously. Mm-hmm. And it's, as you said, I think it's like a muscle that you keep working, you know, you keep let it atrophy. You can't assume you know everything, even when you know as much as you do, or, you know, a scholarly Jew does, is because there's a, you know, that's the discipline, right? Of constantly, of knowing that the learning is bottomless and never sort of being satisfied with what you already know. But I would say that, you know, the holidays that were really completely new to me, that have stayed with me, are some of the most obscure ones. And partly because I was so skeptical that there would be meaning that would be in any way resonant for today. So something, for instance, like the 17th of Tammuz, which, as you know, is
coming
a summer
up.
coming up, and you know, not exactly the favorite, at least it wasn't my favorite time to not be eating when other people are having picnics and barbecues.
Yeah.
But the teaching that I learned there, one was from Stephen Exler, who is now the senior rabbi at HIR, Hebrew Institute of Riverdale, Modern Orthodox Shul in Riverdale, mm-hmm. New York. You know, he said, there's a reason why we have to pull ourselves out of the joy of summer for one day, that there is some power in stopping and noticing not just the destruction of a temple, which might feel remote, but the idea of this is the breach of the temple. This is the end of the road. They're not going to survive
right.
the Roman siege. And this idea that we confront confront tragedies in summer, essentially. Like, there are times where you have no choice but to confront the sad or desperate thing in the middle of a sunny day. And that's what life often throws at us. It's not, you know, it's not convenient.
Yes.
That is something that has stayed with me, and I've seen it play out constantly in my real life. And the other lesson that was very powerful was from Alana Steinhain, who is at Shalom Hartman Institute in North mm-hmm. America. Mm-hmm. And she talked about the liminal space between the knowing that something is over, which they obviously the Jews did, you know, when the Romans had them surrounded and cut off from food and water, and they knew they were not going to survive, and yet having to survive. You have to walk that walk till the end. There is no choice but to keep moving.
Right.
And that is what, you know, this friend of mine was facing exactly at that time with colon cancer, mm-hmm. and two children under the age of 6 years old. There was nothing she could do other than walk till the end, and knowing that it was going to be over. And again, those are things that kind of, you know, come out of Jewish teaching that are suddenly very alive in a, you know, very poignant and very difficult way, but right in front of me. And that happened all the time. I would say, you know, to a holiday, there was one of those arresting, oh my goodness, I can't believe how completely relevant this is.
Wow. Any challenges, Abby, along the way?
You know, many. I think, first of all, Hebrew, without being fluent in it, is a hurdle, because there's a whole other text on the text. Mm-hmm. And even though I have it enough to understand it when it's taught to me, I'm not fluid the way I want it to be. And even you may have seen that I found a tutor on Craigslist, and he was very expert and very, I think, unhappy with my lack of practice. But, you know, so Hebrew was a challenge. And then prayer, frankly, was a challenge. And I think, you know, not having almost like a prayer vocabulary where I am so comfortable standing in services for hours and knowing what everything is for, or what everything we're saying means. And not just because of the Hebrew, but because a lot of it is redundant, inevitably, mm-hmm. is very God-praising, which I am all for, but to a point at which you're kind of like, why does God need this?
Right.
You know, just moments of not necessarily finding the kernel of either truth or, you know, reverberation in a way that kind of carried me along. And that said, I think that that's reality for a lot of Jews.
I was going to say exactly
they're
that.
They're honest about it.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when I was listening to you, I'm like, okay, I can check that box. I have the same exact challenge. It's demand, like you said at the beginning, it's demanding of us, and it's demanding for a reason. It's when you're developing a relationship, it takes work. And, you know, every day we work at our relationships, and one of them is our relationship with God and with nurturing our soul. And definitely prayer is one of them. I can relate to you. Hebrew is definitely a hurdle even for me. And even if you understand it, I think it takes conscious learning into the deeper meaning of the words. And really, prayer it's called service of the heart. It really is something that it's work. It's avoda. It's not something that we just, you know, ease through it. And it's true, you know, when you raise your kids, I see it in my younger kids, you know, you raise them with certain things and they could pray, you know, much better than I can, that's for sure. And I look at them and I hope that eventually, you know, now they know it kind of like by routine, you know what I mean? Like they could just spill the words out of their mouth, but eventually I hope they can mature in their relationship where they really can start breaking it into pieces and really appreciating what they're doing and how they're connecting, you know? So it's a journey like that for all of us. It absolutely, absolutely is. So tell me about your family, because they sound like they were amazing sports, you know, throughout this journey. Like seriously, they were game.
Yes, they were definitely game. They were definitely supportive. You know, they weren't, you know, traveling the road with me, and I didn't expect it, and I didn't feel like I could or should. That ultimately this was my choice, my path, my exploration, not theirs. But that said, you know, I think Judaism is a family-oriented practice. Yes. And there are so many moments where you are together, you want to be together. And actually the power of the holiday is togetherness, whether you're with family or friends. So absolutely, they were integral. And more than anything, you know, they were watching my curiosity kind of blossom. And I don't mean that in kind of a Pollyannish way. I think some of the mistakes that parents make, and I know mine did too, is to, you know, at a certain point say, oh my gosh, look at what my kid doesn't know. I've got to start shoving all this information at them. And instead of almost watching what their kind of excitement is, because if you see them excited about learning or observance or ritual, it's infectious.
Right.
And so that's what I think hopefully has happened, not to mention that they were experiencing a lot of my discoveries in real time.
Right.
And I think that certainly had an impact. And, you know, often I was, you know, struggling with something or not sure where to go to observe something. I mean, they were with me inevitably every step of the way.
Right. I think you've set a wonderful example, because at the end of the day, like you said, you can't shove things down your kid's throat.
No.
But just by them seeing that this must be important, that my mother stopped and really explored it and really researched, like, it's just a very positive, powerful message that's going to take them. You know, my husband always says, you know, our children, everybody has their own journey in their relationship with Judaism, with God, etc. So that,
right.
But that's definitely a positive aspect of whatever relationship they're going to develop as they mature. So speaking of, you mentioned at the beginning that this journey wasn't meant to take you into a life of, you know, necessarily more observance or orthodoxy or whatever yet. But I'm always curious, like, how would you feel if eventually your kids, you know, they go, are they both away in college or just your son?
My son is away and my daughter's about to start.
Oh, yeah. So empty nesters.
I know.
As parents, it happened to our parents, my husband's and I, whatever, when we started becoming religious. But like, how would you feel if they start encountering a different lifestyle and they started exploring and perhaps, you know, do you think you'd be open to that?
Yeah. I mean, I certainly, you know, would be interested in what they were choosing, and it would also be foreign to me on some level. I mean, mm-hmm. That's what I think is fascinating about our tradition, is how many paths there are to it.
Yes.
And how we can actually all feel like one family and also complete strangers.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I would feel if one of my children decided to live an Orthodox life. I also can't imagine not being fascinated by that choice and learning from them.
Right. So I guess, Abby, if you were to describe Judaism in one word, what would you choose now that you've explored this so deeply?
That's a great question. I would say living.
Mm. You know,
Judaism is living, and I mean that, meaning it's alive, meaning it is animate, you know, as opposed to inanimate. It is constantly speaking to us, as you said before.
Yes.
If you start talking back, I don't necessarily know that you can have a one-way dialogue. I do think you have to open the door, but I have found absolutely that it is, you can even just crack the door and it's suddenly, it kind of throwing colors at you, and that it's challenging, at least for me, in the best sense, that it is making me look harder at my life, look harder at my choices, my parenting, my friendships,
mm-hmm.
My role as a child of my parents, you know, as a daughter, as a sibling. There's just so many places where it's either directly or indirectly challenging, I think, your priorities in life in a way that I think is very alive. So I use that word living in that sense.
I love it. I definitely agree with you. And I think there's also another aspect that I often use, which is, you know what, it's a way of life. There's something about it, and I know we could look at it as a very ritualistic faith, but I just think there's just so much more to it. It's not just a religion, it really is a way of life. And I even think, by the way, that there's part two to this book, Avi. Let me just tell you.
Tell me.
I think like there's like a deeper journey that you need to go into, where like all these holidays, they connect on a living, I don't know, how do I explain it? Like on a lifestyle basis,
yeah.
Meaning like a lot of the times when I was reading the book, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. I mean, it was just so beautifully and honest, and just there was so much in there that I loved. But I felt like, oh, I know there's part two where, like, you know, like things like, I know, like we could say, okay, we're preparing for Passover, we're experiencing the Seder, but there's so much preparation to that. There's a three
yeah.
weeks before that have taken over my entire life, or even yesterday I was making my challah for Shabbos. So it's like there's the pre to the day. You know what I mean? Like the preparation.
Yeah.
Coming into Rosh Hashanah is not just leaving your office at 4 o'clock and showing up in shul that day. Like there is 30 days before that, that I'm, you know what I'm saying? So I felt like, ooh, I want Abby to go into the whole, you know, the whole nine yards.
Yeah. No, you're right. And I also think, you know, there was a rabbi, an Orthodox rabbi, who invited me to spend Shabbat with him.
Okay.
And it, you know, I was intimidated. It was suddenly going to be, you know, 2 days, kind of almost. I mean, you know, coming on Friday, not leaving. And sleeping over at his house with his family. And, you know, I should have done it. I think I felt almost like, how can I do this? How can I come in with his family, not bring my family?
Right.
But I wish I had because, and I know I still could.
There's still time.
But just in terms of the book and the experience that would have given me, it is what you're saying. It's all of the, you know, it's the life around these high points or the morning low points that clearly are kind of the meat of a life, of a Jewish life.
Yeah. So listen, there's you never know. Now the kids are off to college. You could try it out. I'd love to see how you put it all into words. So you touched upon, you know, your relationship as a daughter, and being that this is a women's podcast and a women's blog, and I can't not ask the question because you grew up the daughter of a big feminist, Letty Pogrebin, and I can't even imagine. I mean, I'm a feminist, but probably not in the same way that maybe your mother would define it, or even you. So how do you define feminism, and you know, has that even evolved after this? Any relationship to your Jewish journey?
No, I think it's really interesting. And, you know, as you know, part of what I set out to do in the book is not be judgmental going in as to whether or not I would feel excluded from the perspective of from a feminist perspective when I went into an Orthodox space. But I would say that I was aware of it because I was raised to be aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
But because, you know, my mother, as you know, really struggled with the parameters around, you know, they were much more excluding in her childhood about what women could participate in or not.
Right.
I don't have that orientation. You know, I've grown up with women rabbis and, you know, women cantors and seeing, you know, kind of clergy in and out of Jewish rituals. So I'm attuned or used to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely was aware that there are still these spaces where that divide is so integral to what is, I think, authentic worship for you know, a certain number of Jews. And there's no question I struggle with that. And I struggle with it less from almost a feminist standpoint, although it ends up being, I'm not shying away from the word, and more from a sense of like, why should there be a divide that feels to me when I've, you know, studied it or tried to understand it from a halachic point of view, it feels like the jury's a little bit out as to how, you know, that the demands of that are so unequivocal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the idea that there were some spaces where men were truly having a better or a more intense experience, there's just no way, no one's going to argue with me that it was equal in that space. But on the, but other spaces that were divided, they were, you know, both on the women and men's side, they were both fully engaged and there were equal numbers and it was a much more sort of egalitarian separateness, if that makes sense. But, you know, and then just in terms of the preparation of things, the fact that, you know, meals don't just materialize and houses don't just get cleaned and tables don't just get set.
Right.
And the labor of these holidays that has gone on for centuries was not lost on me.
Right. Right. And how much the women, you know,
and the women are bearing that burden. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So I want to tell you that I think there was one very important holiday that you left out, a very important day of the calendar, Abby. Should I tell you what it is?
Yes.
Your Hebrew birthday.
Oh, my gosh. Do I have one?
You have one. We need to look it up, my dear.
I don't even know that.
We need to look it up. I'm going to send you a link after the interview where you can find out what your Hebrew birthday is. And that's a very special day because it is the day that God chose your soul to come into this world with a mission. So you must look it up. And there's special things that we do on that day. We learn a little bit deeper. We try to definitely do give tzedakah and celebrate with friends and share some words of Torah, something special for our souls. So I want you to look it up because it's a special
all
day.
All right. I'm glad you've told me. You're the first person to tell me.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, because it's interesting. I often describe to my students when I talk about the Jewish calendar, I tell them, you know, in Judaism, time is not, we often think of time as a linear thing, but it's not linear. It's in fact a spiral, meaning let's take your birthday, for example. When you stand on the day of your Hebrew birthday on 5777, okay, from creation, you are tapping into the same energy that God put into the world, you know, on the day, whatever many years ago, you know, when you were born, on that day, God put a certain energy in the world that allowed for your soul to come here. And you can tap into that energy. The same thing on Shabbat, the same thing on Rosh Hashanah, which is why I often tell people, you know, you could set your table beautifully on Wednesday night and light candles and have wine and meat, but it just won't do anything for your soul because it's not the energy of Shabbat that is being infused into the world. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like we stand on these rings on the spiral, and we're, you know, the 15th of Nisan, for example, when we're experiencing the Seder, we tap into this energy of liberation that happened 3,000 years ago. So it's so there you go. Now you have another birthday to celebrate and tap into all that positive energy.
Very grateful. I will look it up.
Yeah. Okay. So let's do something fun that I do at the end of all my interviews, and it's JLP fill in the blanks. And this is where I tell you a phrase and you finish it with first thing that comes to mind. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. I'm Abigail Pogrebin and I feel most spiritual when
I am standing with my family during the Hashkivenu prayer.
Wow. You did mention that several times. I heard you talk about, what is it about that prayer that is like really touches you?
I think the idea of asking God to shelter us is kind of that is sort of the pinnacle of my prayer for my children.
Right.
Is they're safe and protected, and that my husband and I are, and everyone I love. But this idea also of the world, you know, not having terrible things happen and having just a sense of safety and sanity,
right?
Which
right.
I think that prayer is.
Oh, I love it. I love it. My favorite mitzvah or one that I connect with the most is?
I have for the last 8 years served breakfast once a week for the homeless at 6 in the morning on Thursdays.
Wow.
I just really started it, honestly, because my daughter wanted to do it and pulled me into it because she wasn't allowed to go alone at first when she was too young.
Mm-hmm.
And she has actually not missed a Thursday. I have. So I have to confess that.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some Thursdays I've missed. But the fact that that became part of my routine when I never had kind of a certain, you know, very direct kind of connection with people that you're helping on a regular basis, that's been probably the most meaningful.
Yeah, really.
And really, there's no fanfare and there's no trophies. You don't get a ribbon for it.
Right.
You just do it.
Beautiful. I love it. My fondest, sweetest Jewish memory is?
My fondest, sweetest Jewish memory is going to be a little cliche, but my children's B'nai Mitzvah. And for each of them, they were poignant for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt literally like my heart left my body.
Wow.
When they were being blessed by the rabbi in front of the ark.
Wow. Very powerful. When I give tzedakah, I like to give to?
I like to give to, I mean, there's certain organizations that I, you know, have sort of been loyal to, particularly because I love their mission and the fact that they execute it. One is Avodah, which is the Jewish Service Corps, which for those who don't know, invites kids who are graduating college to apply for 1 year. You do basically a public service job that in some way is fighting poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And you live in a communal Jewish setting, which essentially the kids set the terms, the sort of the Jewish parameters of the house. There's, you know, residences or locations in Chicago, LA, New York. And that I just, the kids who sign up for that are, you know, signing up for, again, very, very hard labor, both spiritually and literally. Mm-hmm. But it's, to me, what Judaism should be about. And so I give to Avodah, I give to the Auburn Theological Seminary, which is interfaith work, which I think is so important right now. And also for the American Jewish World Service, which is, I think, doing kind of God's work around the world.
Beautiful. Didn't you spend a Friday night dinner with the young fellows at Avodah? Yeah, right?
Yes, exactly right. You're a careful reader, and I thank you. Thank you for that.
Oh, I'm telling you, I love the book, of course.
I'm so glad. Yeah, those kids, I mean, I call them kids, which is ridiculous because I feel closer to them than to my parents. But the fact is I could be their parent, yes. And that's a shocking thing.
All right. Finally, I'm Abigail Pogrebin, and today I'm most grateful for...
For sure, my children at the age that they are, at the stage that they're at, and the friends that they've become.
Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, I'm so looking forward to that stage.
It's a great stage. And it definitely feels like a little bit of a new chapter. So it's poignant, but there's nothing more gratifying.
I'm sure. The truth is, I shouldn't say it like that because every stage is beautiful and we need to be in the moment and appreciate every stage.
Absolutely.
But it definitely is something to look forward when you start seeing the fruits of your labor kind of taking fruition. You start seeing the end product, and it must be a very beautiful, rewarding thing.
Yes.
Abby, thank you so much. You're as delightful as they told me you were. And
oh, well, I love your questions, truly. And I mean that completely sincerely. Then they surprised me, which is the sign of a great journalist.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. Coming from you, I really appreciate it. And I left you with homework. Your homework is to find out your Jewish birthday, which I'm going to help you do. I'm going to handhold you through that one. And I want you to take somebody on that offer on spending a Shabbos. Complete
right.
Shabbos and start looking into this whole going deeper, because I really feel like there's part two here. And if there's anybody who could really put these abstract feelings of Jewish lifestyle into proper words, I think it's you.
Thank you so much for that faith. I have to find it in myself, but I really appreciate it.
I look forward to hearing more from you and your work. I'm sure there's a lot more coming from you. And I look forward to keeping up with you. Congratulations again on the book.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes, leave a rating, and share the podcast with the Jewish women you love. To access today's show notes, ask Yael a question, or suggest a uniquely talented Jewish woman to be featured on the show, visit JewishLatinPrincess.com.